Hey there. Welcome to LSAT Demon Daily. I'm Ben Olson. That's Nathan Fox. We're the founders of LSATdemon.com and our weekly podcast, Thinking LSAT. We have, a couple of listener follow-ups to episode 364, which is on accommodation denials.
Ben's dyslexic. Episode 634 on accommodation denials.
Oh, geez, Louise.
But go ahead. Yeah.
You really asked people to write in and tell us if they had been denied accommodation requests.
I did.
I'm curious. And,
well, we have a couple notes here. So Melissa says, my psychiatrist advised that when he's assisted other patients with this on account of psychological conditions like ADHD, autism, depression, etc., the testing institute will typically request a copy of neuropsychological testing explaining the diagnosis rather than a simple letter from your doctor. The wait list for testing can be 2 to 4 months and requires taking at least half a weekday to undergo testing, which can be mentally and emotionally draining. Insurance often covers it, but it can cost around $2,500 out of pocket. And that all does sound like a terrifying story that your psychiatrist has told you.
Wait a sec, but I don't see anything in here about LSAC.
No, it's not specifically advice about the LSAT. And It sounds like Melissa has not applied for LSAT accommodations.
Yep.
For LSAT accommodations, we have seen student after student after student write in with a simple doctor's note. If you have a prescription for Adderall, I guarantee that you are going to get accommodations. If you have a prescription for, have we seen it specifically with antidepressants? I think you can, though. I'm pretty sure that if you had a psychiatrist just say, so-and-so is treated for depression, so-and-so should get time and a half on the LSAT, or so-and-so needs extra time to process whatever. Again, I want to see the LSAC actually deny you, because, you know, your psychiatrist is probably giving you advice about people being denied accommodations for the SAT or the ACT or the GRE or the GMAT.
Dozens of other tests.
Yeah. Any other exam. I'm an expert in one thing, which is the law school admission test. And I've been doing this for 15 years. We've been doing the podcast for 8 years or whatever it is. And no one has yet written us in and said, I got denied and I appealed and I got denied again. So I don't think Melissa has even applied. I think you're letting your psychiatrist talk you out of it. You're letting your psychiatrist scare you off of it.
Just ask for the letter and then go back and do the testing if it gets requested.
Right. Say, thank you. I understand that that's all true. I hope that doesn't happen to me. But would you mind writing me a letter about my ADHD? Just a simple letter, because I think it's going to work for LSAT purposes.
Yep.
And I'll be shocked if that doesn't go through. If you're actually in psychiatric treatment for pretty much anything and you get a letter from your doctor, shocked if you can't get accommodations.
Yep.
From a simple letter. No need to spend $2,500 to get a fancy battery of testing. Okay, then David writes in, or at least commented on YouTube. I have a reasonable case for accommodations, but my diagnosis is from elementary school and the paperwork is out of date. It costs $1,000 to $4,000 to have disability reaffirmed, so that's out of question for me right now. What sucks is that I have dyscalculia, meaning I'm dyslexic with numbers like Ben Olson, and that severely affects LG scores. Thankfully, I'm strong enough in LR and reading comp that my scores aren't too bad, but if I had extra time, I would be a 170.
Okay. Again, we're not hearing a case in which someone applied and was rejected. And also, like Melissa, I think David is preemptively holding himself back.
Yep.
Like, just get a letter. Don't do the reaffirmation of your disability.
Yep. I would email my primary care doctor and I would say, can you send me a note about my dyscalculia?
Just say, I have it. You have it.
Now, you know, it could be that the doctor is like, yeah, I'm not doing that. Like, I haven't treated you for that. I'm not prescribing you anything for that. I can't do it.
I'd be surprised if you can't find someone who's like, I see you had this diagnosis and I'm willing to at least affirm that, which might be enough for Elsa.
Yeah, you could draft the letter, right? Like, draft a letter from your doctor, from your primary care physician. And all it has to say is facts about your history.
Yep.
And
then your request, time and a half, double yeah. time, whatever the hell you want.
Another idea, have you applied with your out-of-date paperwork? Like, why does that diagnosis have to be reaffirmed?
Yeah.
Now, maybe LSAC is like, you know, if it hasn't an out-of-date on it, we're not going to take it. That's possible. But until you apply, David, you would never know. And there is an appeals process. So it seems like David would be a good candidate for just apply with what you got. If you could supplement it with a doctor's note, that would be even better.
Yeah, it seems like you could get a doctor to sign that letter you were proposing David draft.
If all it stated was facts, like I've reviewed yeah. this record and
yep.
David was accommodated for dyscalculia in blah, blah, blah. It would be very expensive. It would be cost prohibitive for David to get this.
Maybe not even go down that route. Just say, this is yeah. what happened to David. And this is the accommodation that.
How about a line reasonable. That says something like, my review of the medical research shows that dyscalculia is unlikely to go away. Like once diagnosed sure. dyscalculia, there's no cure for dyscalculia.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it, like make a case, make a, that's funny. Cause it's like, just make a case.
Yeah. This is not it's not a high bar. It's a low bar. So give it a shot. Even if you get rejected, you can appeal and you can learn from the rejection. They're like, what are they upset about? Yeah. Are they upset about the fact that you didn't reaffirm? Or are they upset about the fact that your doctor didn't say one random thing? You just get that added and now you appeal.
Yeah. You know, just the only case not to make is like, I would score higher if I got more time.
Yep.
But that ain't going to fly. It's got to be something about you.
Yeah.
And that you need this extra time because your dyscalculia does whatever.
Yep.
But I almost think, yeah, a narrative from you, David, along with your or a short, don't write a story, but just a letter from you with your old diagnosis.
Yeah, that could work. You
it totally could work. And if it doesn't work, then you can go into it. Then you can appeal. But it, like David seems pretty likely to just get approved on the first instance.
Yeah. And right now it sounds like David's going to do nothing and just keep trucking along with out accommodations.
I think Melissa is also guaranteed. Like, you're under treatment from a psychiatrist. Tell your psychiatrist, yep. thank you very much, but the LSAT's different.
Mm-hmm.
Get the letter, apply, then tell us what happens. David, maybe get a doctor to sign off. Maybe just write your own note with the old documentation and apply. And then possibly get denied and then appeal. By the way, for both of you, Melissa and David, if it turns out that you need to find somewhere between $1,000 and $4,000, Melissa specifically said $2,500. If you need to find that money in order to get these accommodations that you are entitled to, like, I know it sucks. I know it's a lot of money, but it's not a prohibitive amount of money that you should just say, oh, that's impossible, but I'm going to apply to law school anyway. Think about how short-sighted that is.
Well, yeah, you got to realize that as soon as you get accommodations, your score is going to jump up easily 5, but more likely 10 points overnight. And considering that in general, 1 point is worth about $10,000 in scholarships, who out there is not going to go out and trade $1,000 for 10? Or a lot more.
Yeah. Trade $2,500 here for $250,000. Like, you know, getting a 15 point. Now, accommodations by itself is not getting you 15 points. It doesn't work that way for people who don't really understand the test. Like, you have to also devote yourself to, I'm still not racing the clock. Like, just because I have extra time doesn't mean, oh, now I get to finish the section and I'm just going to get a 170. Oh,
absolutely. But so many people do get points right away.
Oh,
right?
For sure. Like, I think your 5 point number is probably yeah. pretty good. Like, for people who have no understanding of the test,
yeah.
5 points is just like, well, you have more time. Like, you're going to still be half assing it 50-50 a lot, but at least you're going to get to more questions and your score is going to bump up probably, you know, significantly, but incrementally compared to how much you can improve if you actually start to understand the test. Yeah. But accommodations for people who do both, if you actually understand the test better, and now you have this luxury of 50% or 100% more time, no, sky's the limit. Like, if you start solving the questions, if you just carefully, patiently solve the question, there is no limit to how high you can go. And I think that that's partially responsible for some of the 35 point improvements that we see. It's like, well, not only did I start to understand the test better, but I also got accommodated, and now I like too easy.
Yeah.
But anyway, both of these people, I mean, I understand that that's a lot of money. I get it. That's why it's worth waiting another year if you need to. Like, start saving, get a better job, cut down some of your expenses, start budgeting, put the money aside. If it's, you know, like if David applies with what he's got and then gets denied, save up the cash and go get this disability reaffirmed, because like, yeah, it's going to more than pay off in the long run.
I agree. Thanks for sharing your experiences. Email daily at lsatdemon.com if you'd like to ask us a question or share some LSAT or law school admissions news. Thanks for listening.